Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California and in parallel from the Turf's Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone Show this evening.
Good afternoon, and hope everybody's having a great time, and thanks for tuning into the Water Zone this week. We appreciate all our listeners all over the world, and we have fun doing the show, and we want to make it fun for you and educate you and bring on the best people we know in the water industry to give you information and things that you don't even know about, we're going to tell you about. So I just want to welcome Mr. Chris Davies, who's our other co-host of the show. Chris Davies, how are you tonight?
Hello again to you, Rob. I miss you, man. I haven't seen you for such a long time here. I recognize you only by your voice now. I probably couldn't pick you out in the crowd.
Well, I'll be back shortly. I'll be back in about a week or so. I'm just waiting on that other family issue. Other sets of grandparents for my grandchildren. One of them passed away, and so we're working on the funeral arrangements and things of that sort, so I'll probably be there shortly, unfortunately, to do that. So it's kind of a sad thing, but unfortunately, life goes on, and we gotta do what we gotta do. So anyway,
I'll look forward to seeing you then, buddy. Even if it is,
I appreciate that. Everything going great out in California?
So far, so good. Let's check in with Chris Austin and see how she's doing.
Absolutely. Just gonna say that we like to welcome our wonderful lady who knows everything about water in California and probably a lot more all over the place. She just keeps it quiet. Chris Austin, the purveyor of Mavis Notebook. Good evening, Chris.
Hey, good evening, guys. How are you doing?
Awesome. We'd be fine. We'd be fine. And I just got to say this because I know I say it almost every show at the end when Chris leaves to go and have dinner. But, it's the Mavis Notebook thing for people who, we talk about it all the time. California's independent and most trusted source for water news and information. I mean, she gives you everything you want to know about Water 101. She gives you the basics, explaining everything. Talks about upcoming conferences and symposiums. Talks about the Delta conveyance, groundwater issues, updated or proposed state legislation. I mean, she's our Bible to us. And I always tell everybody at the end of her segment to go look up MavisNotebook.com and be a subscriber to that, a sponsor. It is tax deductible. But I can't keep saying that enough because she is a wonderful person. And like I said, she covers all this water news that I can't even believe one person can do it all. So, again, welcome to the show, Chris.
Well, thank you. And have you guys seen my new little doodads in the Daily Digest, like the little clickable index?
Yes, on the right-hand side.
Pull it
down. Great.
Yeah, you can just pick what article you want to read, and it will take you, as if by magic, to that point in the digest.
Before I click my fingers, I'm already there. It's great. It's awesome.
Yeah, and now I put pictures and everything, so sexing it all up there. So, hey, we're having some fun on the notebook.
We love it. Hey, so going into our wonderful water news here, I know the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation has proposed raising the level of Shasta, and they're opening up a public comment period, but maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit more about that in depth.
Well, this is a project that they've been trying to do to raise Shasta Dam 18.5 feet. Shasta Dam is a large reservoir up in Northern California, and it supplies water mainly for the Central Valley Project, which is mainly agricultural. And actually, the main beneficiaries of this extra water, I believe, would be the Westlands Water District, because they get most of their supply from Shasta. So if you raise the dam, then you can store more water behind the dam, but it also means that more land behind the dam that is, occupied by campgrounds and marinas and an Indian tribe, all that land goes underwater. So, and to complicate matters, one of the rivers that would be flooded or inundated a little bit more with the raising of the dam is the McLeod River. And the McLeod River has been declared a wild and scenic river, that stretch of it, by the state of California. So no state agency can participate in raising the dam because they can't participate in any project that would harm a wild and scenic river. So this is a federal dam, and the feds and President Trump want to raise this dam. But the federal government cannot come in and unilaterally build a water project in a state. They have to have a local partner. They have to have someone in the state. And I don't know, Westland's tried to be that partner, but as it turns out, an irrigation district is an agency of the state. It's a sort of, you know, that's where it came from. So technically, Westlands is an agency of the state and cannot participate in this project. And
I was just saying, that I did not expect that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and now the interesting thing here is that Westlands Water District farms on the east side of the Central Valley, one of the last bits of California Central Valley to come online and do agriculture. And it was as recent as the 1960s. So now if Westlands, and Westlands is south of Delta, okay, so any water coming down from Shasta Dam has to be able to be transferred across the Delta to get into the aqueduct to go south to get to Westlands Water District. And now, it's one of the problems and one of the constrictions in the system that we have in the Delta today is that you can only transfer so much during certain times of the year. So it seems to me that if Westlands was going to participate in raising Shasta Dam, let's say they could, and they were going to pay for that because you have to chip in some money for that, then they would also, you would think, want to be participating in the tunnel project, the Delta Tunnel, so that they could then transfer that water across the Delta. But in the wacky world of water, when the California Water Fix project, which was a two-tunnel project, 9,000 CFS, when that one was really chugging down the train tracks, getting ready to, you know, move ahead, one of the reasons it failed was primarily because Westlands Water District said they wouldn't participate. They wanted to participate, but they had their reasons why they weren't, and that's what started the tanking of the Cal Water Fix project. So now we have the Delta Conveyance Project, and this is only a 6,000 CFS project, and they haven't settled on the size yet. They're considering 3,000 to 7,500 CFS, but this is a much smaller project. So, and they're leaving some space if people, you know, in the Central Valley project want to participate, but nothing's guaranteed. So it seems to me that Westlands Water District would have to pay for Shasta Dam raise and pay for the tunnels, and you can't do one without the other. And I don't know how they can do that. That's awfully expensive. And now we have a smaller tunnel project. So it's, you know, where they're going to end up, who knows. So, but nonetheless, the federal government keeps moving forward with trying to raise Shasta Dam without a state or local partner. And I just don't know how that's going to work out. But somebody must have a plan because they keep moving forward.
Yeah. So how just going back on the specs, they're going to raise it like 15, 20 feet or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, 18 and a half feet.
And a half. That's a lot of water.
Yeah, it would bring, I think I was reading the article, like another 600,000 acre feet, presumably. You know, now, it never is the case that you just build a dam and the dam fills up. You have to have the hydrology and put the dam in the right place to catch the water, right? So just by the virtue of raising Shasta Dam and making that space for 600,000 acre-feet more does not necessarily mean that that water is going to come.
No, don't they also have to check for the weight of all that extra water, what it can do to the ground itself?
Well, yeah, actually, you know, they found that, you know, it can cause earthquakes and stuff, but, you know, I don't know if that's analyzed in the environmental report, but the interesting thing to note is that when you talk to the California water managers, one of the problems in the Central Valley is that while we have dams like Shasta and Oroville, and they call those dams the rim dams, because if you think about how you've seen the Central Valley in California, it's like a big bathtub with a ring of mountains around it, right? So the rim dams are all up in the mountains. Now, there's a whole big vast expanse of valley floor, and there's very few dams down on the valley floor. So the biggest problem that we have with that they have in the Central Valley with flood control is managing the water that falls below the dam. And that's what causes the flooding in the Sacramento River Valley. And this is why there is another reservoir they want to build up there called Sites Reservoir. And this is why Sites Reservoir, I think, seems like it has a lot of potential. It is a reservoir that they would take water from the Sacramento River when it's in a high flow and pump it up into a reservoir that they're building. It's not on a stream, so it's not wrecking a river or a stream or anything. It's much like Diamond Valley Lake that Metropolitan built. They find this dry valley, and they're going to build up the mountains around it, and voila, it's going to become a reservoir. It has great support from the locals. They have people coming forward willing to put up money, agencies. So that project is looking good. And that project is designed to catch some of that water that falls below the dams. But it's questionable if you raise Shasta Dam, how much value you're going to get out of it. You know, doesn't always, just because you build it, the water does not necessarily come.
No, and it's not something that's built instantaneously either.
No. It takes a long time. But, hey, right. I'll tell you what else happened last week that we didn't get a chance to talk about on the show. The much ballyhooed water resilience portfolio was released by the Newsom administration. And it was actually... I have to say the resounding response seemed to be, meh. Usually when a major policy document gets released, you know, everybody comments. But, like, only one organization commented. Only one legislator commented, and it was all pretty mild.
With all the news that's going on with the pandemic and everything else, you know, How high is this going to be on the list?
Well, you know, they had a conference last week where they had all the state water policy heads there. And, you know, they're all saying they're committed to, you know, doing stuff on this portfolio. They are committed to implementing the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Act. They're talking about that. And, you know, it was occurring to me, you know, Rob, how you always say they should, you know, pick their priorities and then solve them one by one, go down the list. And I actually kind of think, and, you know, I think the reason why Newsom is really pushing on this drinking water issue is because I think he does see it as solvable. And it is solvable. You just need the money. And
right.
Now they have the money. And they have the funding, and they're moving forward on that. And I think that's, you know, that's why he is emphasizing this. And when it comes to the Delta, we'll see what happens, you know. But anyways, back to the water resilience portfolio. 124 actions. And this time, they came up with 11 priorities. Finally, we have some priorities. So, and this was actually, I was glad to see this, although ironically the priorities are very similar. The 11 priorities, very similar to the 12 priorities that was in Governor Brown's Water Action Plan.
Color me shocked.
Yeah, but you know, actually one of the best things about this water resilience portfolio is that they did a region analysis for each hydraulic region of the state. And because California is very diverse, we actually have all eight, there's eight types of biomes, you know, biospheres, bioecosystem thing, you know, in the world, and eight types, and all eight types are here in California in somewhere, including rainforest. If you didn't know, we have a technical rainforest on the north coast. So it's very interesting to look in. It's really worthwhile to go look at your region, because they lay out a lot of information, and they've sort of looked at climate change and impacts and the challenges, sure, and stuff. So the regional section is very informative. And so I would, you know, encourage people to go look at that.
Awesome. Well, you know what, I'm going to tell you, Chris, when your comment earlier talking about Shasta Dam and comparing the timeline and how long it's been going on, and you referenced not so long ago, back in the 60s was, I think, your term. thanks for saying that. For a guy who's of an age where the IRS is less interested in me as a taxpayer and more interested in me as a tax taker, that statement holds some merit.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, we have things here in California water. They're multi-generational issues.
Yeah, so would you care to comment? So I read on the, talking about the Daily Digest, as you were reporting on Maven's notebook. Everybody go take a look. So I read that there's a proposal to end water bill surcharges coming up, right, the SDMA. Boy, I cannot think that the growers would be on board with that.
Yeah, you know, I don't know a whole lot about that. I'm going to have to fess up. That is a for people that have investor-owned
utilities. Yeah.
Those are regulated by the CPUC, and I have to unfortunately confess I don't know a lot about that billing. They're thinking about changing it, and people are, you know, unhappy about it.
I would think they would be. So, you know, then I'll go on to this thing, because, you know, my other interest is the fish stocks in California and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, all the surveys that the Bay Delta has done on fish trends and all that stuff and its impact on wildlife and all that stuff. And any comments on the San Francisco Bay Delta and our article that was printed this week about trying to recover all the San Joaquin fish populations in the San Joaquin River?
Stumped you
again on another one of those.
I'm trying to think back. There's so much I looked at. That one actually came up a couple days ago. I'm like, hey, what was that about? But
I think, you know, we're in COVID, but there's so much happening right now, Chris. It's just, I don't know how you keep up, really. You are amazing.
I don't know how I do either sometimes. I'm like, wow. But, you know, that's the nice thing about California water. It just, you know, it just never stops.
What's another big story, then, that you can comment on this week?
How about the winery issues with the new winery wastewater regulation?
Yeah, wineries are not happy about that. But, you know, I mean, clean water, you know, it discharges into waterways is a big deal. And in wine country, a lot of fish share those streams. And, yeah, you know, people are going to have to, as we all pack in, we all have to be better about some of these things. So, yeah, wineries are not happy. Of course, you know, when you're selling $2 wine, maybe you have to charge a little more. $2 Chuck.
Sounds pretty fishy to me.
Chuck is long gone, by the way.
Chris. Huh?
$2 Chuck is long gone.
Oh,
Joe's
yeah.
Not still around, but the $2 price tag is long gone.
Isn't it up
no
to $3 now?
Yeah, I'm a potato juice drinker, so that's my quarantine juice.
Right on.
Well, we're dating ourselves when we talk about any Green Springs and Boone Farm and all that stuff.
Strawberry Hill.
Strawberry Hill when we were in the younger days. So what's some of the upcoming conferences coming up? I know there's going to have a bunch of them coming up. Aqua's got one and a bunch of other things happening.
Well, yeah, we had Aqua last week on two days. It was really a very nicely put together conference, kind of a mix of pre-records and chat rooms and stuff. Although I miss the cocktail parties, so you know what can I say?
Oh. We have the San Bernardino Water Conference coming up in 2 weeks.
Oh,
I'll be
yes.
up, and I'll be heading up the. Technology and Innovation Panel, and so that should be interesting. I guess some great questions to ask some of these people who are going to be on the panel to see how up they are for my questions.
Yeah, there you go. Isn't Secretary Crowfoot the keynote speaker?
No, not at this one, no.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought that I saw that announced.
Oh. The last I heard, which was on a conference call 2 days ago, that wasn't official. So it could be. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll double check that. You're probably right because you know more about water news than anybody else that I know. So.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to get everybody's hopes up, but you know.
I was gonna bet my house on you.
Yeah. There you go. Don't bet it on me.
So where do you think what's going to happen in California? Because I know California is asking for money to help out with the COVID stuff and everything else. And you know, people need their unemployment things. And where do you think, they're going to go into their pockets and take a lot of money out to put a lot towards water right now? Or that's just at this point to think that in a couple months, everything's going to be better and then they can go ahead and do that.
Well, I think, you know, there's going to be stimulus packages. There will be some type of federal stimulus and probably something from the state, too. And when, you know, we talk stimulus projects, then people generally are looking at infrastructure. So everyone's sort of gearing up to kind of think about what infrastructure projects they might want to hope to get when we do this stimulus money. You know, I don't know. It's bad all over. And in so many sectors, it's really hard to predict. My parents live in Nevada, by the way. And I mean, you think we have it bad in California. In Nevada, it's in the Constitution. There is no state income tax. That income tax is paid by taxes on the casinos.
Yeah.
So when the casino shut down, all they had left was the warehouse tax, because that's the other thing, warehouses. But, you know, it's bad news for Nevada, you know, because they're really stuck. So there's going to be so many states with their hands out. We'll have to see.
Absolutely. Well, we're coming up to our commercial break. And, Chris, as always, Chris Davey and I really thank you for being on our show every week. We certainly appreciate that, and like I said, we like to have somebody to banter with and talk about the different issues that are happening in California and what affects everybody here. So thank you again.
I certainly enjoy coming on the show. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So everybody who's listening, go to maidensnotebook.com. Again, become a subscriber, become a sponsor, or whatever you want. It's great news. It comes to your computer every single day. And it's really the encyclopedia of water, what's happening here in the state. So, Chris, thank you very much. Hope you have a great week. Stay safe with your family, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Take care, guys.
Bye, Chris.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back with our featured guest. So stick around. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Oh, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. Eco Series products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied, fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied, fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco Solvent Cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
They love you. They love you not. They love you. Satisfying your customers, it's a full-time job. Want an easy way to make them happy? Try having your ornamentals delivered straight to the job site with Nursery Direct. Could save you and your clients a pretty penny. Think about it. Instead of driving to the nearest nursery, picking up the order, and then driving to the job site, the crew's able to begin work right away. That cuts time and labor. Savings you can pass on to your customers. And you can get your plants delivered direct, even if you don't have a nursery branch in your area. Here's another quick tip. Keep a substitutions list on standby for every project, so your team knows what to do in case a plant isn't in stock. Because there's nothing customers appreciate more than a project that finishes on time and on budget. They love you. They really love you. Aw.
KCAA.
All right, well, welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone Show, and we got a great featured guest coming on. His name is Trace Blackmore, and he's the president of a company called Blackmore Enterprises. For those who may want to call in and ask any questions of him, you may. The topic is going to be water treatment industry, and for that matter. The call-in numbers, if you're out of California, outside the state, you can dial toll-free at 888-909-1050. And if you're local to us, you can do 909-792-5222. And all listeners are welcome to call in and ask anything you want. So we'd like to introduce Mr. Trace Blackmore. Trace, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
We certainly appreciate it. Chris and I are very excited to have you on. As our listeners know, we like to talk about everything water and give people a different perspective, because a lot of people don't understand or even know what water treatment is. I mean, they can probably take a stab at it, but they don't know. And Chris and I always like to go back to the beginning of stuff and kind of get more of a perspective on the person that we're interviewing. So maybe you can give us a little background about yourself and what What made you choose the water treatment industry and going to that?
Sure. I always joke that people are either in the water treatment industry through either court order or maybe they're a family member. It's interesting how people get involved in the industry. And mine was a family member. My father was involved in the industry, and since a very early age, he got free labor from it. And I remember being very young at the kitchen table, and he had me doing titrations. Of course, I had no idea what I was doing. I was making one color change into another color, and I was just recording how many drops I counted. It wasn't until later in life that I actually started getting a paycheck for him, and I started servicing some of his accounts. And lo and behold, it was an industry that I learned to love. It's an industry that I've got some dear friends in. It's been very, very lucrative for me. And my hope is that I've made an impact on the industry that I've loved so much.
Well, I'll tell you, welcome to the show first, Trace. And this is Chris, the other co-host. I can certainly abide to the fact that getting a paycheck makes anything more interesting, right?
Exactly, exactly. And it took about 10 years for my father to actually give me that first paycheck, mind you.
Oh, wow. So you're a patient guy as well. That's something. But, you know, so you got into it by family. What would be an example of the other way to do it that you know, court ordered? How would that happen?
Well, that was a joke. A lot of people that are entering into the industry now that aren't in it from family members, we see a lot of environmental science degrees in this industry, a lot of chemical engineers,
sure.
People that have been responsible for water treatment in the armed forces. A lot of those people are in our industry as well.
All right. Well, you're the chief cook and bottle washer, I guess, Blackmore Enterprises Incorporated. For our listeners, tell us a little bit about the company. Kind of, you know, what do you do? What services do you provide? Maybe a little historical background on your company, if you don't mind.
Sure, absolutely. And you got it. If there's anything that needs to be done, I'm the one that ultimately has to do it if everybody else says no. So Blackmore Enterprises started in 2004. And what we do is industrial water treatment for cooling towers, boilers, and closed-loop systems. So we don't necessarily treat the water that you're going to drink, but what we do treat is the equipment of what is making things that you're consuming, maybe milk or beer or milk jugs or plastic, all sorts of things. When we put water into the equipment to transfer heat from one area to another, water just has a way of corroding everything it comes in contact with. So one of our jobs is to try to slow down that corrosion as much as possible and then make sure that we can make that heat transfer as efficient as possible. And we're located in Atlanta, Georgia, so we're on the total other side of the coast from you guys. And like I said, we've been around since about 2004.
Do you do just in that particular region, or do you take your business all over the country?
So when I worked for a larger company, I was all over the country, and I might have been home a couple of days a month. And I learned that not everybody likes that lifestyle, and then even the people that do like that lifestyle, that only is short-lived, I think. So we have found that there is plenty of business in the Atlanta metropolitan area. So that's the area that we chose to serve. However, we have many contacts over the United States where if somebody has a question, we can put them in contact with somebody that can do services for them. But I also consult all over the world. So people will hire me to come in, check out their systems, seeing if they're being done right, like bid specifications. So although my guys aren't servicing accounts all over the United States, I do travel quite a bit, when we're allowed to travel, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right now it's kind of tough to do that. So I've been reading a little about your company, and maybe you can explain to some of our listeners how you've been involved in some volunteer leadership in the water treatment industry. You do, obviously, you're very well known, you get around, how does that work?
Sure. It actually happened by mistake, so I was very involved, and I still am, with the Association of Water Technologies. And I remember I was at a technical training they had put on, and I remember I had gone from the airport using the directions that they had in their marketing literature, and they were wrong. And I didn't appreciate that, so I went to the person that was putting on that menu, and I told him. And it just so happened he was the president that year. And before I knew it, I was on that committee that developed that document. So be careful. If you complain about something, you might be the one that's chosen to fix it. And that's how I got involved with that. I soon became the chair of that committee. And then in 2007, I was elected to the board of directors. In 2011, I became the president of that organization. And I'm still involved in some of the training that they do. Today, I'm on the BOMA board. BOMA stands for Building Owners and Manufacturers Association. And, you know, being involved in the associations that our companies touch really allow us to give back and then also get back as well.
Are you singularly, are you the, like the market leader in the industry, Trace, or are there other folks that do kind of the same thing?
There are quite a few folks that do the same thing that I do. I wouldn't say that I'm the market leader, but I will say because of the podcast that I host, I'm probably one of the more well-known people in the industry.
Well, that's excellent. Sorry, Rob, go ahead, buddy.
No. It's actually the discussion I want. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more. I actually listened to a couple of them. They're called Scaling Up H2O.
Yep.
And,
yes, sir.
And you also do some specialized. Can you give our listeners a little background? Because again, our listeners is varied from homeowners to, you know, the business companies to the industry things, and a lot of people don't know the whole process of things, what they do, and maybe you can give them a little bit where they can find your podcast and so forth.
Sure. Well, the podcast, as you mentioned, is Scaling Up H2O, and I started the podcast in 2017. Kind of a funny story how I started it. About a year before, a friend of mine encouraged me to host my own podcast, and I was flattered, and then I answered him with, well, what the heck is a podcast? I had no idea. So he introduced me to my first podcast player, and then I was hooked. I just couldn't believe that there was all this great information out there, free for the taking, that you could listen to. So I listened to podcasts for quite some time, and then I decided, you know, I'm going to pull the trigger, and I'm going to launch my own podcast. And the reason I did that is, you know, I see things when I'm consulting that just aren't right. And when I interview people and I ask them, why did you do it this way? They said, well, I didn't know any better, and I didn't know how to learn. So I wanted to take that excuse away. So we're in our cars quite a bit. So while we're driving from account to account, instead of listening to sports radio, now we can use the car as a classroom, and we can learn a little bit as we're driving.
Wow. So how long have you been doing the podcast?
So I am in my third year. We have about 200 episodes online. And it is a weekly podcast. So we kind of alternate. I will do questions from the audience one week where I'll answer. I'll have a guest come in and answer. And then I'll do an interview show the next week.
Huh. That's good. You know, it's the one thing that Chris and I have found, and the reason we think we've been lucky enough to be successful, is that we want to share technology and information with people. We want to educate the people. And there's so much that even, I'll just say it right out, I learned a whole lot from doing the show about different parts of the industry that I wouldn't have known about if I wasn't doing this. And it's so interesting to meet the people who do it and where their ideas come, where their passion is, and so forth. And I know Chris and I always joke about that we look at this transition time because a lot of people who have been in the industry are getting to be, you know, your retirement age, and what's the industry going to do? Where are we going to get more people to fall into place and pick up what everybody else has started? Do you see that in your part of the industry?
Absolutely, I do. That is a really big issue and an unanswered question for our industry. That's something that the Association of Water Technologies that I mentioned earlier is looking into. And, you know, it's unless you know somebody who's in this industry, like I alluded to before, people aren't flocking to this industry. So business owners and associations are having to go out and explain that this career is available and get people interested in it.
Yeah.
I think we've done on that ourselves on the radio show here, right? At least from a succession standpoint, right? And introducing people who wouldn't normally choose to endeavor or even do research on the water industry in general, whether it's industrial wastewater or irrigation like us or the sports turf or anything like that. So we found it very rewarding to, you know, get feedback from listeners and other participants that say, hey, you know, I didn't know anything about blah, blah, blah subject that you talked last week, and I found it just fascinating. And in some cases, we learned, don't we, Rob, that it's led to career changes and other things.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we do a lot of career days with different universities. I'm on a board on a couple of universities out here in California. And when we go to these fairs and we have a booth and students come by and they're asking and we put our products out on the table so they can look at it. And most of them, even being college kids, have no idea about how an irrigation system works. Just wasn't of interest in it. They didn't realize that. But then when you start talking to some mechanical engineers and software engineers, and electronic engineers and things like that, all of a sudden, oh, well, wait a minute, I can relate to that. I know how water moves. I understand about pressure and temperature and friction loss and things. And then all of a sudden they start putting this all together. They say, yeah, I never thought of that. They never thought about coming into that kind of industry. So, you know, I see that's going to be a big deal coming up in the next 5 to 10 years because there's a lot of transitioning of people who are moving out of the industry and retiring, and it's going to be a shame that that happens. So the you have a thing called the Mastermind Group?
Yes. So from the Scaling Up H2O podcast, I actually started coaching people. People would call in and say, hey, can you coach me on how to become a better water treater, how to become a better husband, you know, personal things, all of that. So I started doing that on a one-to-one basis. And I've been involved in a mastermind for probably about 10 years. And a mastermind is where like-minded people get together and somebody shares an issue, and the whole group rallies around and tries to solve that issue. So I was thinking, well, my bandwidth is going to be cut pretty short if I keep taking people on one-on-one. So I started a mastermind group called the Rising Tide Mastermind. And basically what we're doing there is we've got about a group of 10 people, and we've got several groups of 10. But we start off the call, and we meet weekly, for exactly 1 hour. We don't go over 1 second, exactly 1 hour, starting on time. And we go over with what wins have we had between this week and last week. Then we go into accountability. A lot of people join the group for accountability, and a lot of people don't join the group because of accountability. But if you say you're going to do something, the group holds you accountable that will get done. Then we might discuss a book that we're reading, and then we move into putting a person in the middle. And that's where somebody has an issue. And then with that issue, they explain what they've done, why it's an issue. And then all the other people, they're only able to ask questions. They can't give advice. We go around the table, and we get more clarifying questions. Once all the clarifying questions are asked, we then move over to giving that person advice. And the person that has the issue, they're not allowed to talk. They can just take it in. At the end of that, we say, what are you going to do about it? And then we hold them accountable that they're going to do it. And that's our weekly call. And it's just been fantastic what people have been able to accomplish.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, kudos on that process, Trace. It sounds great. Rising Tide Mastermind. I mean, a phenomenal name kind of says it all. So tell us when you run across a newbie to the industry, right? Neophyte, doesn't know much and all that kind of stuff, how would you explain industrial water treatment to that person?
Sure. industrial water treatment is definitely a voodoo that not everybody understands, and even people that think they understand it don't truly understand it. So I always like to envision a four-legged stool. And the four-legged stool is what water treatment is going to sit on. And each one of those legs represents what a good, solid water treatment program is. So one leg would represent corrosion protection. I mentioned that earlier. Water is the universal solvent, so we have to slow down that corrosion. If you've ever boiled a pot of water and all the solids are remaining in that pot, well, that's stale, and that's going to happen in these heat transfer systems. Of course, that's not good. That means we need to use more energy. So the second leg is preventing that stale. Of course, things grow in water. Some things are very unhealthy that grow in water. So the third leg is microbial control. And then the fourth leg is just general dirt and debris control, because dirt and debris comes in with our water. Now, if we can solve each one of those areas, the legs are very sturdy, which means that stool is very sturdy, and water treatment is very sound sitting on that stool. But if you just neglect just one, no matter how good you're doing the other three, you can't have a good water treatment program.
Wow, yeah.
Does that industry obviously uses sophisticated technology, but do you see a trend, and maybe it's already there, and I don't know it yet, with this artificial intelligence of things that they're trying to do and putting everything to the Internet of Things and collecting all this data? So is that something that's going to be, or going to be, more emphasized in the water treatment business?
Absolutely, and it's already happening. You know, measuring how much water is going in and going out, and then comparing that to even analytical sampling that can happen in real time now to make sure everything is where it needs to be. And instead of waiting for somebody maybe come by in a month or so to correct an issue, we are able to learn that there's an issue right when it happens. Just the other day, we got an alarm on one of our customers' cooling towers, and they were using way too much water. Now, we had just serviced that account about 2 days before, and because we got the alarm, we were able to call up there, and what happened, the floats came off the cooling tower. So would that have overflowed for the next 28 days? Not sure, but it didn't, and I'm sure that saved them hundreds of thousands of gallons of water if they didn't fix it within a month's time.
Well, and I know once before I was reading some information about the cooling towers that this new technology, and I forget the name of the company who has this device that hooks onto those things and keeps the temperature at a certain level all the time, and they use, I forget the technology that they had on it. It's pretty interesting. And speaking of the cooling towers, I'm kind of going around about here, I read a lot of things about Legionnaire's disease, Legionella. Tell me how that appears in cooling towers, or is the cause of that, or the things that are going through it cause it.
Sure. Legionella is a pathogenic bacteria that if you inhale contaminated water droplets, you could possibly get a pneumonia, which is called Legionnaire's disease. There's a flu-like form of that, which is called Pontiac fever, but that's all from the Legionella bacteria. Back in the 70s, there was a Legionnaires convention where it was originally discovered, and that's why they call it Legionella. And it was discovered in the cooling tower. So, of course, everybody thinks it just grows in the cooling tower, but no, it's all around us. The issue is that when we put it in these man-made systems and we allow things to recirculate and circulate, and we're not looking for a species such as that, it grows at a population that when contaminated water droplets spread out, they can contaminate and infect the people.
So when that happens, what happens to the whole system? Does it have to stop functioning and do a retro? I'll use the word cleaning, scrubbing, or anything to get rid of those things. How does that get fixed?
Well, there's a document out there that ASHRAE put out, and it's called the 188 document, and it states what you need to do. And a lot of people don't know about that document. If you live in New York, you know about that document because part of its law, especially when it comes to cooling towers. And what that says is that facilities need a water management plan. And it includes the cooling tower. But if you look at the CDC data and you think, okay, well, only Legionella comes from the cooling tower, only about 20% of the reported cases come from the cooling tower. 80% are from the potable water system. So it's also important to look at those systems as well. So what a water management plan is that a team goes in and they try to understand the system, and then they come up with, okay, where are the potential hazards that Legionella can develop and infect people? And now we're going to put control ranges on those so we can test and make sure that whatever we're doing to mitigate the growth of Legionella is staying very low, if not at all. And when we test for it and we find it, we go to the plan, and then that tells us, okay, if you're in this range, maybe just retest. It's very low. If it gets a little bit higher, maybe we add some sort of sanitizer to it. If it gets extremely high, maybe we shut the system down and completely clean it and then restart it and test it before we restart the system. So depending on what the plan says is actually what we would do. But the thing is, most people don't know that they need a plan.
Does it take a long time to bring a system that's down back up?
You know, it's system by system. And I've treated systems that have had sort of a medium dose of Legionella in them. And we put some sort of sanitizer, like an oxidizer, like a chlorine bleach in. And we were able to knock it down. We were able to test it. Came back as non-detect. And everything was fine. There was another system where there was a hidden dead leg, and we just weren't getting flow to that system, but it was getting just enough water by that it was leaching Legionella bacteria into the system, and it took forever to find that. So the lesson was, don't have dead legs in systems, because that's what's going to happen. Once we found it, we plumbed some things, so we had some flow to the system, and we haven't had an issue since.
Oh, okay.
Does it take a lot of training for your personnel to be trained up and aware of all these things, Trey?
Well, we've been doing it for quite a while. Even before that became a topic that a lot of people were talking about. So if you were just starting up today, there are a lot of programs out there, so I don't think you would have to look very hard to get training. And then, you know, your team, they might be lacking experience. So after you get the training, maybe call a company that knows what they're doing, asking if maybe you can shadow them, and that'll probably put you in the fast lane for being able to do some things like that.
All right.
Well, can you tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you? Because I'm sure if there's going to be people who want to know much more than that they heard in this short hour. So how can they find you?
Sure. Well, I'm going to encourage everybody to go to scalinguph2o.com. That, of course, is our podcast website. If you add a /mastermind to that, you go straight to the mastermind that we were talking about. Right there is a comment section, and you can write anything you like in there. I try to answer every comment that I get. It's in the show ideas page. So that's probably the best way to do that.
Okay, excellent. Well, Trace, Chris and I appreciate you being on our show tonight. I'm sure we're going to get some calls to find out more how they can get a hold of you, and we'll pass that on to you. And we do appreciate you taking the time to come on, and many thanks again.
Yeah, certainly.
Boy, it's been
Trace.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for being available. I know it's East Coast time there, man, so it's after the mid-evening hour.
Yeah, past my bedtime here, but it was far worth it.
Okay, appreciate it. Well, good night, everybody. We'll see you next week. And the one thing that Chris and I tell you to do every single week is...
Keep our planet blue. Good night, everybody.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM, and now 102.3 FM.